Hey everyone, we have got a wonderful episode here for you guys today, and you'll realize in just a second why that was such a terrible pun. Jeremy Laban owns the Wonder Event Rentals, Wonder Moving Company, and Wonder Staging Company. And at 26, Jeremy is not only an incredibly thoughtful guy, but has quickly been building up a portfolio of local service businesses in the San Diego area for the past couple of years. So he joined us on the podcast today for 60 minutes to walk us through how he runs each of his businesses and why he prefers buying businesses to building them. And then later on, as we get deeper into the conversation, we talk about things like Jeremy's life principles, what's motivating him to go and get after it at such a young age, and what businesses have been catching his eye lately. So if you guys are interested in things like holding companies or service businesses or even just making $100,000 a year on your own terms, definitely stick around for the rest of this episode. I think you all will really enjoy it. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast.
Weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
Hey, so before getting into the episode, Gio and I are doing something a little bit different today where we actually partnered with our first ever sponsorship of the Next Generation. And the reason we're doing this is kind of twofold. One, because from our standpoint, we want to be able to go and make these episodes as high quality as possible for you guys. That way, you guys enjoy listening to them more and we can go and continue to bring on bigger name guests. And the second reason is we wanted to find companies that we thought people that are in our age demographic and listening to this show would actually really enjoy using and learning more about. And that kind of led us down the rabbit hole of meeting Cameron from Praxis. And for anyone who's listening right now that wants to know a little bit more about what Praxis is, it's actually a one-year apprenticeship program that combines a professional boot camp with a full-time paid job at a startup. So we've talked a lot about colleges and if you should be working at a job right now and how to quit and all that kind of stuff. If that's up your alley and you feel like you're just kind of going down a dead end road right now and you want to figure out something else and you want to learn a new skill, there's never been a better time to do that. And there's never been an easier way to do that than with Praxis. So far, they've had over 450 people graduate from their program. And after a 6-month apprenticeship where they go and teach you skills like sales, marketing, account management, things like that, they'll actually go and place you into a job at a startup where you can go and do that for 6 months full time. And it's paid. So it's actually a really cool opportunity for entrepreneurial people looking for a more direct route to starting a career than college. And if you want to go and learn more, you can actually go and register for a program workshop over at workshop.discoverpraxis.com/thenextgeneration. And I know that's a bit of a mouthful, so I'm going to link it down in the show notes below. I wanted to ask you, how was Cancun? Was it sick?
Yeah, dude, it was a lot of fun. We were there for 6 nights, which feels like a good trip, but it went by super fast. So it was good, a lot of fun. We went to some cenotes, so we did the snorkeling in the caves, which was cool. We didn't do Tulum, but we went to Island Mujeres, I think it's called, and we rented like a golf cart and explored the whole island, so that was fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man, it was a good trip. It was fun.
Did you get a resort, or you guys get like an Airbnb? Or
yeah, we had that? A resort, an all-inclusive resort. One, so that was fun, yeah.
Nice. Does it feel like now that you're back, are you like anxious to get back into stuff, or are you like kind of still wishing you were on vacation a little bit?
Yeah, like I came home excited to get back to work. We are in the middle of our really busy season right now, so most of my work right now is just like the grind of doing events, and so I was not excited about that, but like it's good to be home, good to work on the business, but for the most part I was excited to come back, but part of me like wanted some more time, so it was fun though.
It's got to be slightly daunting. I didn't actually even think about this at all when we chatted the other week, but it's gonna be slightly daunting that like every event for you is someone's biggest day of their life. Do you ever think about that?
Yeah, I do, especially when I get bad feedback. So yeah, it's a big deal, especially at like venues. So when it's at people's like backyards, it's a little different, but at venues you have the coordinators, the venue managers, owners, plus like the bride, their family. So that is a little bit intimidating, but I mean, we've been doing it for, it's like our third year, and this year we're doing, I think, 270 events. And so I've got a lot of experience. I don't really get like nervous, but yeah, it is a big deal, like not wanting to mess someone's big day up, or like my biggest fear is like during transit, like the truck crashes or we like break something and we like don't have it, we can't show up. So one time our tire blew out on the way to an event and we were stranded on the side of the road for like 3 hours. It's like a big box truck, so you need like a special like
jack
to fix it. And so thankfully that was the day before the event, we were on the way, but if that would have been the day of, I would have been screwed. So yeah, it's like,
all you hear is just the bride in the background. It's like, the dance floor is not coming. And it's like all of the supplies and everything like that just on the side of a highway.
Yeah, we've had some, I mean, everyone's different, right? But we've had some brides that are just crazy. But most people are pretty cool and pretty understanding. But yeah, you do get those customers once in a while that are really picky, or like, you know, they nitpick things, or you show up and they're like, oh, this is not what I thought it would be. And you're kind of like, well, you signed and paid, like you saw the invoice kind of thing. So obviously I don't respond that way on the spot, but in my head I'm thinking, come on, dude, like, you know what you got. So
I'm assuming we're going to dive into it a bunch more, but I'm curious, in terms of the actual products you rent, are you dealing with other vendors for other products that the bride and groom want to have as well? Or do you typically try to handle and be the only one that's bringing in kind of rented equipment there?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, we do sub rent a good amount of stuff from people, just depending on the order. But for the most part, we provide, like, we work with the client just for our items. And so, you know, most of the time, every wedding we do or event, the client has like multiple vendors, but I try to like supply as much as I can. So once in a while, I'll sub rent to where I'm coordinating other people. But that's typically chaotic, and then the margins aren't as good. And so I normally just stick to our stuff for the most part. Yeah.
Nice. All right, cool. That actually probably sounds like a pretty good time to even tell people what it is you do and who you are and the three different businesses that you're running right now.
Yeah, so I got my start in business back in 2018. So up until then, I worked for my dad. He owns a landscaping business in San Diego. At this point, I think they have over 150 employees. And so, you know, when I graduated high school, I went with him full time. And my plan was to work my way up the ranks and take over his business. And, you know, right after I graduated college, I kind of realized, like, you know, A, I wanted to do my own thing, but B, there wasn't really a spot for me. The path, like, wasn't very clear. And so I decided to leave and kind of figure out my plan. And shortly after, in August, I bought my first business, which is a wedding rental company. And we do like higher end specialty rentals. And so I did that. And then 2019, we bought a second business and we merged them together to form our company, which is now Wonder Events. And then, yeah, that's kind of how that business kind of started growing. And then during COVID, we started a moving business kind of out of necessity because there weren't a lot of events happening and I wanted to keep growing and keep making money and keep you know, keeping guys employed. So started a moving company. And then just recently, about a couple months ago, my wife and I partnered with one of our good friends and we started a home staging business. So now we you know, stage people's houses that are selling homes. And yeah, that's kind of my business experience so far.
Taking it a step back to that first company you bought, I feel like you kind of just glossed over, like, oh, you know, I was going to work for my dad. Mm-hmm. And then I bought my first company. What did that, you know, transition actually look like? Because I think most people would view that as an extremely daunting and difficult task. Mm-hmm. To either A, find that company, B, close on it, and, you know, everything else that's involved there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question. So that opportunity came up just kind of like a friend of a friend. So at the time, my wife now, but she was my girlfriend, and she was on like a girls retreat like weekend with some friends. And one of the girls there, who's like a friend of ours that we kind of know, she just like casually mentioned, like, yeah, my husband and I are thinking of selling our business. And my wife Connie at the time was like, oh my gosh, like Jeremy would probably be super like interested in that. And so we ended up meeting with them. And long story short, like I think it was 3 months or 4 months later, we had a contract and decided to do it. And dude, it was a pretty good experience. You know, we had several meetings of kind of going through like, you know, what does the business look like? You know, what's their clientele? Do they have recurring revenue? You know, what's the kind of events that we do? All this stuff. And so I had lots of questions, lots of ideas. And then, you know, when it came time to do it, it all kind of worked out pretty naturally. It was a risk. Like it was by no means easy, by no means like a clear path, but like I knew that I didn't want to work for someone else and I knew that I wasn't going to work for my dad. So this was kind of like an opportunity. I had money saved. I was saving to buy a house at the time. So I had a good chunk to put down. And so I decided to do it. And, you know, it's done very well. And I think pretty quickly on, we realized it was a good choice. So
how old were you at the time?
I was 22. Yeah, 22.
Wow.
Yeah. No, 23, I think. Yeah.
And then for something like that, is that typically some sort of multiple of EBITDA or net profit, or is it different metric that you would typically transact
on? Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, it's basically just I think it's 1.25 or 1.5 times just like annual revenue. Plus you have all the assets of the rentals you're acquiring. And then also kind of weird, but any like future clients on the books count as a liability. So it's kind of a weird part of the formula. But
so when you say they count as a liability, you mean that anybody, like let's say
you know, somebody booked a wedding before, now they're booking another wedding, right? Using you guys as well. Is that deferred revenue, or what does that look like?
Yeah, deferred revenue for future clients. So when we bought the business in 2018, so everyone on the books for like 2019, 2020, because you do have clients that book that far out, because the seller basically keeps the first deposit of those events, and then we have the second half. So that's how it works.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, that makes a ton of sense. Damn, that's cool. I mean, so when we chatted like 2 weeks ago, you were basically saying that when you bought this one, you were thrilled about it. Good deal. Like you got skin in the game and you got your foot in the door. But then you actually bought another one like a year or two afterwards, and you felt like, I don't know if I want to say you felt like you got a better deal, but at least you felt like you did things a little bit better. Can you kind of clarify to anyone listening to this, like what the difference was between those two deals and maybe
that's
like
what
the difference
was? That's a really good question. Yeah, so the first business was kind of like, I mean, I was much younger. I had zero experience. I mean, I worked for my dad and I did like sales and account management. So I had like some experience in like talking with people and that kind of thing. But when it came to like my own business, I had no idea what I was doing and I just wanted to get in the game. And so I was kind of like, you know, they presented the numbers to me and they had their proposal and I was like, yep, let's do it. Like I didn't, you know, do much negotiating or kind of just try and talk them down at all. So I feel like I kind of feel like I overpaid a little bit for the first one, not a whole lot. I mean, it was a good deal, but I would have, in hindsight, I probably would have tried to negotiate a little bit more and bring things down. The second business in 2019, I don't know, I felt more confident. Like I knew what I just knew the industry. Like I knew what I was doing. And so, you know, I think their original offer, I'm pretty sure we talked them down like 30K from the original offer. And so just through like negotiating and like, you know, them making their presentation and me saying like, no, here's why, like, here's my thoughts and kind of just like meeting them in the middle. So
that's, yeah. I mean, I think that's beautiful, right? Like, I think there's a lot to be said about the confidence that you have going into something that you've been running for two years at this point. One question I had was, Gio and I, we just recorded a podcast episode about this, like bought like a self-storage deal down in Texas. And like, so we're excited to go and get into that market and start to try to like figure out how can we make a lot of money off of this kind of stuff. But one thing that like made us really want to go and jump at this thing like so quickly when we found it was an exact phrase that you just said, which was you wanted to get skin in the game. Because from our perspective, as someone who has never purchased like a commercial real estate property in the past, we just have never done it before, right? We didn't know what to look for. We didn't know what to do. We've read about this stuff, but I think there's a really big difference between reading about something and actually practicing it. Like that skin in the game concept, is that something that you try to apply into a lot of different areas in your life? Or how important was it to you to, I guess, like actually start operating a business like this? I don't know if that's a weird question.
No, that makes sense. My natural like tendency is to like have an idea and to sit on it, right? I just think about it. I'm very methodical. I think things through. I don't make quick decisions. My wife always says like, if she can get me on board for a decision, she knows it's a great choice because you know, when I do something, I'm pretty much all in, but it takes me a while to get there. So I think that at the time I wasn't at all thinking like, yeah, skin the game, like let's just start. But a big part of me was thinking like, I'm very unhappy with what I'm currently doing. Like I wasn't miserable, but I was just unhappy with my current like situation in life. And so I kind of looked
at it. What were you doing, by the way? Were you working for your dad or were you?
I was still there. Yeah. So I had graduated college and we basically had like a meeting where we kind of both like mutually agreed, like I should probably leave and do my own thing. But at the time, I said like, let's just stay put and then I'll keep looking kind of thing. And so I was looking around. I think I had one other job I was like interviewing for, but like I wasn't really excited about it. And so when this opportunity came up, I was very excited. I don't know. It kind of just like felt right to me. Like I knew that it was going to be a risk no matter what I did. And I kind of hesitated to start a business because I didn't want to wait so long to just build revenue. And I knew that if I bought something, I was essentially buying revenue. I was buying the business. And so, you know, it's more than just the inventory. It's the clientele. It's the future booked events, you know, all that stuff. And so that's kind of what pushed me to do it.
Had you ever done anything in the wedding industry before? Or I feel like, how did you come
zero
in?
Zero experience. Yeah.
Nothing. How did you come in and learn it that fast? Did they, like, how much time did you have training or like, did you botch any weddings or what happened during that transition phase?
I hope not. No, that's a really good question. So, zero experience in weddings. For the most part, like I do learn things pretty quickly and then I learn like as doing. So I'm not the kind of guy to like sit in the classroom and learn. And so I felt confident I could pick it up. But yeah, I didn't have any experience. I think I went on two events with the previous owners. That's all I did. And so, we do like a variety of rentals from, you know, farm tables, chairs, like lighting, dance floors, all this kind of stuff. And so, basically I did 2 events with them, and I learned like a quarter of the stuff that we do. And then from there, like I would have like weekly calls with them to kind of go over stuff, but I didn't get a whole lot of training. Most of it was just on the fly. The hardest part was scheduling, because, you know, oftentimes, I mean, back then we were probably doing like anywhere from 3 to 6 events a weekend. Now we're doing between like 7 to 15 events a weekend. And so that's the hardest part of like, is like knowing how to schedule events and how to like properly space things. And so at first, yeah, that was my mistake of like just basically not giving us enough time. And so we'd be rushing to job and forget some small things, and maybe we, whatever, missed a few details here and there. For the most part, I think we had successful events, but yeah, I didn't get a whole lot of training.
To give some context, and happy to kind of cut this out if you don't want to answer it, or depending on maybe what numbers you could share, are you able to give any, you know, high level revenue numbers or an employee count, or, you know, anything to give a gauge on what you guys are doing? Because right, one event a month is much different than 15 a weekend.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I think it's important to share revenue. Every podcast I listen to, those are my favorite ones. When they talk about the details, it gets me excited. So I don't mind sharing. So yeah, when we took over the business at that point, I think the highest year they had done in revenue was, I think, like $120,000. Just for reference, we bought it in August 15th, 2018. And between August and then the end of the year, we did $84,000 in just those 4 or 5 months. And then the following year, we did $255,000 in 2019. 2020, we had some good goals for, I think our goal was like 350. It was out of our control, but we did like 140 in 2020, so a huge dip. But then this year, we're having a phenomenal year. So this year, we've currently on our books for the year have done 450, and I think we'll finish right around like $500,000 is my goal. So,
damn. Okay, so does that mean that, I'm trying to do the mental math in my head, all right? So say you guys make $500,000 this year off of renting products, or I don't know, products isn't the right word, let's call them like farm tables, dance floors, like cool decor and all that kind of stuff. What's the average order value that you guys are typically charging?
Yeah, that's a good question. The average order, they all vary, right? I would say right, the average order is right around like $1,800, but we've had some that were, I think our biggest was like $9,800. And so, you know, they all vary. I would say a good event I'm stoked on is about $5,000. But the average one is probably just under 2,000. If you like do the math.
Yeah. Is your only cost labor after the fixed cost, right? I'm assuming there might be some damage stuff, but like, let's say you buy a dance floor for, I'm on your website right now, which is why I keep on using this dance floor. I'm like going through all of like your inventory, your lounge packages, like all of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like it's really cool to check out, but like, let's say a dance floor specifically, you buy a whole kit, maybe you buy a couple kits. After that, are there really any expenses?
That's a good question. So, I mean, from an actual event, like the hard cost would be labor, gas, and that's basically it. And then there's overhead, and there's things that overlap. You know, we have insurance, and we have a warehouse, and then, you know, wear and tear in the vehicle. And the things do break and need to be repaired. Like literally this morning, I was on the phone with someone. I need to get some of my couches reupholstered, whatever. So, there are some overhead costs, but for the most part, it's pretty high margins, and it's pretty low cost for the most part.
So it's pretty profitable. And from an accounting perspective, since it's all equipment rentals, you can probably depreciate all of that and at the end of the year, right? So like, let's say you're doing $500,000. I'm using numbers that I don't know if these are true or not. You do $500,000, you take home 300 out of it. And then like, realistically, you can probably depreciate, call it $50,000, $20,000 or something like that off of all of your actual equipment as well too.
Yep, exactly. And same with vehicles as well too.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. That's really cool.
Are you finding any cohesion between the three separate companies? Because I got to imagine that's got to be pretty difficult at some point, just from a management side, between scheduling and employees and everything going along there.
Wait, hold on a second. This is the coolest part about this entire podcast episode, though, for anyone listening, is, I don't know why I jumped in, mostly just because I got really excited about this, but like you're running three businesses with all of the same employees, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Explain how that works. That's cool.
Same employees, same equipment, same truck, same warehouse, same like just like center of operations, even like same software and everything that we use to track everything. It's all kind of the same. Yeah, it right now it's a lot. So right now we're just in the middle of our busiest time of the year. Like I've explained, the event business is our main bread and butter. Everything else is kind of small and fills in the gaps. But yeah, everything ties together, which is great. And so when things are slower for events, it's awesome. Right now it's more of like a almost a hassle because I mean the money is really in events. That's where we make the most money. Staging is pretty good money as well, but moving is more of like I just want to keep guys working and I want to, you know, kind of pay for like monthly expenses, but we don't make a whole lot of moving money with moving. But that's kind of why when I started the moving, actually it came from a podcast because I was sitting there thinking that, you know, our current like our business was shut down, we weren't making money, and I was thinking of a way, what's a business that I could start with the things that I already have right now, right, with my trucks, my guys. And so that's kind of why we started it, because I thought, okay, this is very hand in hand. And then so that one kind of worked out. And then with staging, it's kind of been the same thing. Like, you know, we have the warehouse, we have a place to store everything, we have the truck, we have the systems down, and so we really just needed a designer, which is our partner. She does the designing, and now everything kind of works hand in hand with that. And so it's a cool little operation. I definitely need help. I need people. I'm looking to hire people. I need help running things, but it's a good little operation.
Is there one to two things you can point to that you do differently after you've bought these companies to scale them out, run more efficiently, increase margins, have happier employees, anything along those lines?
Yeah, that's a good question. Part of the first thing we did initially was just like a new proposal software. The last company owner just basically used like spreadsheets and that kind of stuff. And so we found a really awesome software that really tracks everything. One of the hardest parts about events is whenever you get inquiries, if you don't have a system to track everything, you have to go through manually and go through all of your currently booked events on that day and figure out like what's already booked and what's not. When you think of our, like the scale of rentals that we do like you mentioned lounge furniture, right? And so I have to say, okay, these two pink pillows are booked for this lounge for this day. Are they available for this other customer? And so it's very like time consuming. Our software now automatically just tells me. So we did that. We also integrated like a wish list submission thing on our website. So clients can basically go on, it's kind of like online shopping, but they can basically fill out like an online quote and submit it. Then I receive that and it's basically the quote is already built. All I have to do is check availability, confirm it, add delivery costs and send it out. So that's probably one of the like best changes I made initially. Besides that, just growing, we got a bigger warehouse with more space. I think at first we had like a 900 square foot warehouse. Now we have over 3,000 square feet. So that's been great just to have more space. Sadly, we've already outgrown it. So we're like at our max already. And then another thing I'm working on, we haven't done it yet, but we just purchased a new truck. It's coming in about a month and a half. So when we get that new truck, that's going to be great. It's going to be much bigger. We can split routes up and whatnot. And then lastly, I would say just going all in on it. I mean, the previous owner, it was a husband and wife, and the husband had a full-time job with a great job that he loved. And then the mom, you know, they had also had three kids. And so full-time mom. And so it's kind of like their side hustle. And for me, it's been my full-time job, you know, 50, 60, 70 hours a week. And so just kind of giving it all that I have, and then being very fast to get back to customers. You know, I think a lot of times in this industry, customers reach out to vendors and they don't hear back for multiple days at a time. And so I do my best to get back same day or within 24 hours. And so I think that's also helped us grow as well.
I bet you someone could go around and just buy small businesses with the entire concept of just responding to customer inquiries within a day. Like the amount of times we're doing any projects or almost anything, I'll probably reach out to, I don't know, say 20, 30 people. You get 8 phone calls back. Yep. It's kind of insane. So are you pushing on marketing channels specifically, or is it really just kind of the same marketing channels that were already set up, but figuring out how to deal with those leads better?
Yeah, that's a great question. We just spent our first marketing dollars about 4 months ago. And before that, we have literally spent nothing towards marketing. So it's all been just organic traffic through our website. The first business that we bought, you know, they ranked on the first page, you know, probably like the 2 or 3 spot for most of the major key terms. And then the second business we bought, same thing. And so since then, I think we've improved our SEO. For some things, we're ranking number one, but most things were between 1 and 5 for all like our key terms. And so that's been our biggest way to for marketing. And then just do like venues. And so part of what I do during my week is I spend time reaching out to, you know, owners of venues and coordinators, and I do small things. Like I offer like a little kickback to them, a little referral commission if they send us work, and just small things like that. You know, during like the holidays, I go around, I visit the offices in person, I bring them little gifts, just talk with them and whatnot. You know, with vendors and coordinators, they often want to do things called like style shoots. And so they'll say, hey, can we, you know, can we rent some of your stuff for the day just for a little style shoot to promote our services? And whenever I can, I do it for free. I don't charge them. And that way it's just kind of building good rapport and trying to, you know, get on their good side. Connor, do you have a question? Goodwill.
Yeah, well, I have a bunch of questions. But
I could tell you're trying to speak up, so I don't want to talk too much.
I mean, the goal, trust me, people are here to hear you. They don't want to hear me. They've heard me for too many episodes at this point. I just had a bunch of questions as you've been talking for the last 10 minutes. I'm just going to go kind of like rapid fire through some of them. Like one, you mentioned that you added software right away into some of these events-based businesses. What was the actual software?
What was the software called?
Yeah, like what was the name of it? Like I know people love just like the details of that kind of stuff. Yeah,
it's called a Good Shuffle Pro.
Good Shuffle Pro. Okay, cool.
Yep.
The other thing that I like just can't stop thinking of / laughing about is how there's probably a chance as you run these three businesses over the next couple of years that you have like the same client across all three businesses in such a short time frame. Has that thought ever like occurred to you?
Dude, that's a really funny thing you just bring up. Yeah. So we've had when we first started our moving business, one of our first clients actually was a coordinator, someone that we did events with. And she part of what I did was we have a pretty good network with our wedding company. I think our Instagram has like 4,000 followers, which is not a lot, but it's decent. And we have a good email list. And so when we started moving company, the first thing I did was send out a newsletter, and I got several responses back, and one of them was a coordinator, and we literally moved her like a month later. So that was one of our first clients, which was awesome. And then it was kind of funny, but she moved, and then like literally 2 months later moved again. And I, she reached out to us about us wanted us to move her twice, which is kind of funny. And then, we just had a client that we moved, it's like an older lady. We moved her from her existing house to her new house. And then we also staged her house for, the sale of her home, which is awesome. So
yeah, that's hilarious, because I'm just imagining in my head, I'm like, okay, someone gets married, what do they do after that? They get a house. Okay, now they're seeing like Jeremy's staged house, and like, oh, now they need to help moving all of their stuff out of their apartment. It's like, who are you gonna call? Oh, let's do the guy that like staged the house and also like, you know, hooked us up at the wedding. Like, that would be perfect.
It's been cool. You know, it's kind of in like a hard spot, like with the moving thing. Like I'm trying to figure out, do I want to grow it? Or do I want to shut it down? Because it's, it was really good for a season, but right now we're so busy with the events and it's going so well that I almost don't want to do moves. And so it's like a hard balance of like, I get these inquiries. I'm kind of like, do I want to do that? Like, is it worth it? Like, not really. And so, I don't know. I'm in a hard spot of trying to figure out, do I want to grow that, get more trucks, get more guys and grow that as well, or just do it on the side, or like you're saying, whenever it kind of works out for like repeat customers.
Is it worth just, you know, doubling your prices? And then to that stance, it's, you know, if you get a job that comes in, it's probably worth it because you're charging, you know, way more to maybe cover your time. And then, but I don't know if maybe you price yourself out of the market there.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was having lunch with a friend last week, and he said the same thing. I haven't done that yet, but yeah, I have thought about that, just raising my prices or only doing like a specific kind of client, you know? Yeah.
And then one specific question in terms of the SEO, are you, when you're saying that your ranking position, is that for the Google My Business or the general website?
So our website has multiple different pages. We have so many inventory items. So yeah, it's the website, but it's also like the specific items on those pages. So if someone's searching, you know, farm table San Diego, then that specific page is going to come up. But our best ranking page is obviously our homepage. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Going back to the moving thing real quick, I was just going to quickly say my parents are in the process of actually like moving right now and trying to hire a mover. And my mom, I was talking to her the other day, she was saying that she called 11 different movers, and out of the 11, I think 8 of them all just went straight to voicemail. And the voicemail was, we are not doing any more moves in September. We are fully booked. Yep. If you want to go and book a move, like, let us know your October, like a date past October 15th. So I don't know if it's the same thing over in San Diego right now, but if you're looking for something in the South Jersey area, it sounds like there might still be a little bit of like juice to squeeze out of that one.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny.
The other thing I had too here is, I like how you're branding them, right? So first of all, if anyone wants to check out your websites, you know, feel free to head on over there. I think it's wonderdesignandhomestaging.com, wondermovingcompany.com, wondereventrentals.com. So you're kind of going for the parent company play where you're branding them all under the same thing. Is it aside from the simplicity of talking about the businesses you run, right, saying it's Wonder, we've got an event, a moving, and a staging company, has there been any other kind of cross promotion between the two, or between the three, like kind of how we were talking about before with like people probably maybe wanting to use all three in the area?
Yeah, I mean, most of it comes from people that we just talked to, word of mouth, and people that we're speaking with. And so as part of the thing, if you look at our event website, you'll see that there's a moving page on there. And part of what I tried to do is like redirect people to, you know, say, hey, we do events, but we also do staging. The idea is that they're going to find all these companies. They're going to find events. That's probably where they're going to start. But then they're going to see that we do home staging. They're going to see that we do moving. Whenever I get leads for events, I mean, right now, dude, we're getting between... like, no exaggeration, we're probably getting between 10 to 15 inquiries per day for events. I mean, it's nuts. It's like out of this plan. I can't describe how busy it is. And so part of what I do is when I send out like a quote to a client, I say, hey, thanks for reaching out. Here's your quote. Hey, just so you know, we do moving. We do, you know, I kind of tell them what we do. And so part of the idea is that they find these other companies through the main event business.
What does the next couple of years look like in terms of either location, company size, scale? You know, would your ultimate goal become, you know, is it to become the largest rental and an event company in the country? Is it kind of more of a dominate the local market? Would you want to franchise out? Just going to see where it goes, revenue goals, monetary goals. I'm assuming you've thought that through a little bit.
That's a good question. I think about that all the time. I'm kind of at the mindset I want to keep it fairly small. I don't think I want to get much bigger, to be honest. You know, my dad owns a pretty big business. I think I mentioned they have over 150 employees, and it's just like a lot to keep track of. And he always says that he made the most money when his business had, I think he said, like 15 employees. That's when he made the most money. It was a good sweet spot for him. And since then, as he's grown, his costs have increased, the overhead has increased. Plus, you know, doing business in California, there's just a lot of regulation. And so, you know, that's a good question. But because of that, I think I want to keep my business fairly small. I want to grow a little bit more. I mean, you guys are getting me in trouble. I heard that episode you guys did about the photo booth rental, so now I'm all excited about that. I'm probably gonna do that next year too. But you know, I want to grow a little bit more for sure. I would like to part of my ultimate goal would be to hire some pretty soon, within the next year or two, hire someone to run the business. So right now I have it to where I have a guy that pretty much runs the operations. I don't do a whole lot of the actual events for the most part. Right now I am, because we're so busy, but my goal is to keep it that way to where I'm not out on the truck. I'm just, you know, in my office kind of running things, working on the business. And then soon it would be to hire someone to run the business. And then I would like to just start more companies. And so, you know, more things, whether they're along the same lines or they're completely different industries, I don't know. But yeah, probably keep it roughly the same size, grow a little bit more. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that then for a sec, because you own three businesses now. You clearly have a knack for wanting to start new things, coming up with ideas. You hear about photo booth rentals and you're like, I want to get into that. What are some of the other spaces that you find pretty interesting right now, whether it's outside of your industry or even, like, you know, we can also riff on the actual wedding side of things too, and figure out like what other opportunities are there in the wedding space, or, you know, other service businesses too.
Yeah, that's a good question. For the wedding industry, for my current business, there are a few more things I want to do to just grow the business. Kind of when we first started, we just mainly did like tables, chairs, and lights. And my idea was like, what can I do? What can I add to my existing orders to kind of fluff the revenue? How can I add a little bit more margin for every job? Rather than, let's say, you know, for example, if I add a photo booth, for example, that business likely will be its own separate events. I mean, ideally, it would be my same events that I already have, but I want to add a product that's going to fit in with people's current order. So for example, the lounge furniture, that's a great addition to someone that has 10 tables, 100 chairs. Boom, they can add a lounge package for $800 kind of thing, right? And so it's easy. We can move it fast. It's very easy to set up. And so I have a few more ideas in my current industry. Outside of that, I've always been fascinated in starting like a mobile car wash or detail business. Right now, I'm really hot on the idea of starting a pool maintenance business. I really want to do that, but I don't want to start one. I want to buy one. So I look every week. I look on places to buy, you know, to see what's out there. And so that's probably my most excited idea that I will probably do that pretty soon. Besides that, those are probably my two main ones that I would do in the near future. Yeah.
Are you looking on like Biz Buy Sell or any specific brokers? Yeah. Biz Buy Sell? Okay.
Yeah. And there's word of mouth. I mean, I literally made two calls last week from friends that I know. A guy from my church mentioned that he knew of a guy that was selling his business, a pool cleaning business. So I called him, left a voicemail. So yeah, I'm actively just talking to people and seeing what I can find. Yeah.
Do you have any sort of
Biz Buy Sell?
What was that?
Oh, sorry. I was just gonna say, what are your thoughts on like biz buy sell as a whole? Because I feel like I'll go on like there. It. You don't like it?
No.
I mean, I don't blame you, right? I've been on there countless hours, and it's usually either pitches to start a franchise or somebody mm-hmm. who has never had any kind of financials for years. But I'm curious, like what's your, do you literally just go on there and type in like car detailing or / pool maintenance and then kind of try to find something out of like a needle in the haystack, or what are you looking
for?
You're
just that, just looking. Yeah, I make it. Yeah, I've, okay. You know, I've also been, I mean, I kind of came from like real estate. I mean, I've taken some like online, like out of state real estate investing courses. You know, kind of the same thing with Zillow, right? You kind of pick your area, you make your filters, and just do your like daily searches. Same idea. So I do the same thing with buying. We're trying to look for businesses to buy. Yeah.
I feel like the worst part was I've seen a couple listings in our area, and I know the company, and I'll know the business, and I'll know like the info is just wrong that the broker is putting out. Like,
Wait. You got to give the example, because I sent you this listing. You don't want to give the example?
No, I can't dive into it too much, but like I don't know. I definitely knew some of the background numbers on different numbers that were inaccurate on the listing. I can share them.
We'll say it off air.
I want to know if you can take what you're doing and franchise it across the country. Could you bundle this up, get, you know, the hungry college students or maybe the seasoned entrepreneur, still don't know which one's better, give them a game plan on, hey, this is how we set up the event business. I get 30%, 20%, I don't know, whatever that looks like, and give them the documentation and help them run it and scale it out. Is that something that's feasible with this type of model?
It's a good question. I think that it is. I don't know if I'm the guy to do that. And the reason is because I've bought in all of my companies. And so I think that model, if it would be me saying, hey, here's like the business in the box, here are the steps, here's what you need, here's the tools, specifically for event rentals. I don't know how to advise someone to start that from scratch. I mean, I have ideas, but I don't know how long that would take. Now, if it was someone saying like, if it was like helping people find opportunities to buy and then from there equipping them, yes, I could. I do think what I'm doing, to answer your question, is possible to do that. Yes, it could be franchised. Again, I just don't know if I'm the one to do that. That makes sense.
Why are you buying them versus building them? Because age old debate, right? Like, because I think you can buy into cash flow, you can buy into brand equity and all that kind of stuff. And I understand that the multiples tend to be pretty low in these businesses, but I think the multiples tend to be low because you tend to not be buying much compared to other companies, right? The multiples for software companies mm-hmm. tend like to go and be times, pretty right? high. Yeah. It can be like 7 to 10x because you're technically buying projected future cash flows because it's a reoccurring revenue model, right? For something like weddings, right? Let's take weddings as a perfect example. They got married, right? So like you're probably not going to sell again to your old clients. Maybe you might get referrals from them, but like usually they're a one and done service. So I'm curious why buy it versus just start Wonder Pool Cleaning.
Yeah, I have a lot of ideas or a lot of thoughts on that. In regards to the rental side of things, you kind of are buying the recurring revenue. I mean, it's not built that way, but if you get the right deal, if you get the right company, in my situation, where both companies I bought have two things they had that were great. Besides the inventory, they had the website, which is the SEO, and then they had relationships. And so I think that's pretty underrated. I think it goes a long way. My software tracks like where the revenue comes from. So we had one client, for example, that we inherited from the first company we bought. And in 2019, that client alone sent us, I think it was like $27,000 from just one coordinator. And so I think that's like a huge thing that just, you know, that's, we like bought that relationship, if that makes sense. I didn't start that. We kind of inherited it. And then, I mean, for me, just like seeing how well it worked, dude. I mean, the first business we bought it for, it was $150,000. And like I said, from August to December, we made $84,000. The second business I bought, we bought it for $57,000. We made that back that full investment in 90 days. And so just doing it a few times, I'm like sold on it. And so I think it'll be different for every industry, but at least for events, like it's worked out so well for me. And then I think of like the moving company, for example, that I started from scratch, and it's so hard to start a company from scratch. It just takes forever. I mean, I honestly haven't put a whole lot of effort into trying to grow that business. I kind of got up and running, just kind of like from there, whatever comes in, I do. But I feel like if I tried to start that thing and really like grow it, it'd be very hard and take a long time. And so that's kind of why I'm so excited about buying businesses. I look at it as buying revenue. So, yeah.
I would imagine the training aspect and the ability to look and maybe follow the owners through at least one or two weddings probably does help as well. I would imagine if you want to go start one of these from scratch and had never had exposure to the product you're selling or whatever it is, right? Probably be a bit more difficult or take more time to maybe have to shadow someone. So in my mind, you know, I would probably look at it from two perspectives of, correct me if I'm wrong, probably saves you a lot of time to get to that level. And then also gives you the ability to understand at least somewhat how to operate the business. And then you can view, you know, where you can improve efficiencies.
Yeah, that's a good point. That makes sense. It reminds me of a mentor of mine a couple years ago when I was debating between buying his business. At the time, I was saving to buy a house, so I had some money saved. I kind of went to him and said, "Hey, bro, like, here's this opportunity that I have. I can buy this business. Here's what it looks like, or I can, you know, look into buying a house." And for me, at that time, it was buying a house. That's like the way to go. That's secure. That's a smart thing to do. And this guy said to me, like, "Dude," he said, "put your money towards a cash making machine." And it's always like stuck with me ever since that day, because that's kind of what I've done and it's paid off. And so, you know, to your point, like, yes, yeah, starting things and building the products and making connections, it just takes so long. And so I think for some people, that's the way to go. For me, I don't think I'm built to do that. I'm more built to like take what's already set up and started and try to make it better and improve it.
Are you pretty money motivated?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. And for a while, I thought that was a bad thing. I don't want to be like filthy rich, but I mean, I want to be secure. I want to have wealth. I want to be comfortable. For a long time, I thought it was a bad thing. I remember one time my dad, he asked me that question. He was like, "Are you motivated by money?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "Good, me too." He's like, "That's a good thing." And so, yeah, I am.
My take on it is that I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think the biggest thing that most people don't do is they don't figure out what motivates them at all. And they always just kind of think that they're motivated by money, right? Like, that's why you see people like selling their soul to investment banking for like, you know, $150,000 a year right out of college or whatever, just because it's a ton of money and they want to go and make a lot of money really fast. And they think that that's like the thing that's going to go and drive it for them. Whereas as you start going more and more, you start to realize, okay, actually, maybe I'm not money motivated. Maybe I'm status motivated, right? I want to go and appear that I have this option, right? Or maybe I'm motivated by what others, or I guess what others think about me is also status motivated, by like flexibility or something like that, by freedom, things like that. So I think figuring out what does motivate you is super important. And it's also really important, I think, too, from a hiring standpoint, right? So if you've got employees and all they want to do is make sure that they can make their mortgage payment, their kids can go and, you know, be in like, you know, some soccer clubs or something like that after school, like security is a really big deal for them. Make sure that you do everything in your power to like let them know, hey, you've got this job. Don't sweat it at all. I think that's at least good to recognize what does motivate you.
And I think Tim Ferriss has a interesting point that he brings up a lot in terms of framing that question. I think he uses the example of like, you know, would you rather make 200 grand a year working 110 hours a week with zero flexibility versus, you know, 40 grand a year working 2 hours a week? And then, you know, how do you find that middle ground? Because a lot of people in the end would probably actually pick the, you know, time, flexibility, and freedom with less money. But it's tough if you don't actually know that yourself kind of going into it. And then you're fighting for the money and you have no flexibility. And then you kind of lose on both fronts. So it's always an interesting question, I think, in my mind. I want to dive a little bit into what are your recommendations for the, you know, 2020, what, you were 22 when you bought the company, 23, for the other kid that's going to be in that position, graduated college, maybe didn't graduate college, has a little bit of money, wants to start a small business. What does he do?
Yeah, good question. I would say what my mentor told me is put your money towards a cash making machine. I mean, that's what I would advise. Again, I don't know if that looks like buying something or starting from scratch. I think, you know, everyone's different. Everyone's built differently. And then, I mean, that can go so many different ways, right? What kind of business do you want to start and what industry, all these ideas. But yeah, it would be, for me, if you have an opportunity to buy something, I would say do it. You know, a guy actually that used to work for me, for my rental company, he's now working for another guy doing detailing. and he's thinking about buying that business. And I'm like, dude, hell yeah. Like, I'm giving all these ideas. We're talking all about it. And so I think if you have any opportunity to buy a business, do it. That's my advice. Yeah.
And as long as the business is good. Yes. Any opportunity.
Let's slow down. That's a really good point. Yes. Don't just go buy everything. Yeah.
Would you tell them to just go on Biz Buy Sell, assuming that half the companies on there are not perfect, but to at least kind of get those reps in?
Way more than half.
Yeah.
I would say I'm 98%.
You know, is it worth getting those reps in, at least reviewing the financials and calling the brokers and you know, at least understanding what they should start to look for? Because I just feel like a lot of people struggle with that initial, you know, hey, I want to go buy a company, and then they have no idea what that actual step A looks like to begin that process.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I haven't gone that route yet. So I mean, I wouldn't say to do that. For me, I'm really big on just like your network and people that you know. I mean, again, our first business, a friend of ours, friend of our church. Second business was someone in our industry. Third business, partnered with our best friends. And then now the pool cleaning business, which I'm looking into doing. I just talk about it. Like me and Corey, Corey Haynes was on a podcast recently. Me and him have a podcast together. I mentioned on that podcast not too long ago. And since then, one of the pastors from my church heard the episode and said, hey, he had called me. Hey, this guy, Mark, whatever, is selling his business. Call him. And so, boom, I called him. Like, I think just talking about it, not being afraid. And part of my struggle is I constantly have ideas. I'm constantly thinking about new things. I don't want to be that guy that's like, you know, from one thing to the next. Like, I want to be faithful with what I have and do well with what's in front of me. But at the same time, like, I can't be afraid to just talk about my ideas. And so I would tell that person in this scenario, just talk about it. Talk about it with your network, your friends, your family, wherever you're at, the gym, people that you know, whatever. Just talk about it. And I think people listen, and I think people will hear that and remember it and hopefully send opportunities your way.
Dude, there is so much power in what you just said, because I think not enough people recognize the fact that, like, I guess inbound content or inbound like lead generation, whatever. I'm not using the right words at all here right now, but what I'm trying to say is, like, when you throw out there, like, hey, I want to do something. Like, I have the best example that comes to mind for me is every year I try to go and post on my blog, like, hey, here's my goals for the year. Like, want to do this much in sales, want to do like buy a real estate unit, I want to like get good at chess, like random shit, right? And random shit, yeah, whatever I'm feeling for the year, here's what I want to do. And I'll post that and I'll share it, and like I posted on Twitter, got like 500,000 impressions, and so many people started tweeting at me, DMing me. I had some dude who's like, I'm a professional chess coach. If you're ever interested in free lessons, like, I've got you. And I'm like, just from publishing this post, like, you don't know who I am. But I completely agree with the idea that the more you talk about what you want to do or what you are doing, it attracts a certain type of talent, a certain type of person, and opportunities tend to come to you much easier than having to go and sort through like the whole haystack and the needle, like biz buy sell kind of concepts.
And I fully agree with that. Yeah.
So you grew up, your dad was an entrepreneur. Awesome. Like, can definitely relate to that. So I think you kind of see some of the benefits there. Since running your own businesses, have there been any benefits that you've noticed that go beyond just the example of what people think, right? I think when people think of running your own business, the immediate two gut reactions are unlimited upside potential, and way more freedom of time / no boss. Has there been anything else that, like, since running these businesses, you've thought to yourself, like, oh damn, like, this has actually been like a fantastic thing. Like, no way am I going back to a job because I have this now.
Or the inverse of that.
Yeah, I was going to start with the inverse, actually. Because I think, like, to your point, most people just think of it as, you know, the unlimited upside and all this money and free time. And there is a lot of that, but it for sure does not start that way. You know, so to start with the inverse, I mean, when I first bought the business, like, I just dove in, like, head first, like, all in. And, you know, I had so many days where I would literally work until 2, 3, 4 in the morning and literally start the next day at 6 a.m. I mean, that was very common for me. Plus, you know, I'm working all day on events. I get home and I have to do emails and plan for the next weekend. And then during the week, like, I'm slammed with stuff. And so, dude, it was a lot of that. I think people don't really realize how hard that is. Kind of funny, the guy you had on about the photo booth business, I was just kind of like, I could totally get him. Like, I know what that's like. I get the industry. And so I love that episode. I really, I understand what he's going through. And so, you know, the downside, I think if you're down with that for a season, then that's a good route for you to go. You can start a business. If you're okay to be somewhat unhappy or work really hard for a short amount of time, I think you should do it. Now the upside, yeah, I mean, I feel like we're just honestly this year really experiencing the benefits of having our business. Like we're growing, we're making money now. And I mean, things that people don't think about, I mean, the obvious things are obviously time and doing whatever you want. And then, and hopefully the money too, right? But things you don't think about, a lot of the tax benefits, I would say, using like pre-tax dollars on stuff, you know, that's great. And we get to run a lot of like personal things through our business. You know, I'm in my home office right now that our business rents from us. And so that's great. Yeah, I think the tax savings is one of the big things. Trying to think what else. Miles. So we spend a lot of money on our credit card for the business. And so we get lots of, you know, flyer miles, which is great, and points and whatnot. That's a good question. I haven't really thought about that. What are some things that people don't really think about? I may need to think about that one a little bit more.
What do you think is the most stressful part or difficult in your specific area of business?
That's a good question. I would say just like the day of events. And so when things are really tight and we have a lot of events, so actually like next weekend we have 15 events. It's actually like a record weekend. And so that's going to be nuts. And it's just going to be crazy. I'm going to be working a whole lot. And so it is what it is, but, yeah, that day will be intense and it's going to be moving fast. And, I think I have one route that weekend that ends at 3 a.m. and start the next day at like 8. And so, you know, that kind of stuff where you just work really late at night and you're trying not to fall asleep at the wheel and then you got to start the next day really early. So that's probably the hardest part, just being stressed, because again, we're doing people's wedding days. And so, you know, I can be late for someone's baby shower or party, but I can't be late for their wedding, right? The ceremony starts at this time. And so that's probably the most stressful part.
What does that look like from a logistics standpoint? I guess now I'm really curious. You have 15 events on the weekend or on a day. Do you have multiple trucks, or do you typically try to line it up? Like, you know, you block out two different routes for two trucks and they hit 7 events each, or what is that? How does that work?
Yeah, good, great question. Yeah. Right now we have one truck. We just bought a new one I mentioned that's coming about a month and a half. And so, yeah, I rent a vehicle almost every weekend. So I rent, you know, an extra truck or two, and then that way I can split routes up. When I'm booking events, I actually honestly don't worry a whole lot about like, if it's going to fit, if I have enough time, like, cause right now we're booking events for like 2022, for example. And I pretty much, if the inventory is available, I book it. I don't worry about like, do we have the logistics? Are we going to make the timeline? I just book the event. And then about 3 weeks out, I sit down. Like today, I spent half my day just planning the next few weeks of events. And so I just look through it all. And it's a big puzzle, dude. It's a big, gigantic mess sometimes, but it always works out every single time. And so, yeah, to answer your question, multiple different trucks, different routes. And then the idea is that we're just, you know, we're hitting them all on the same smooth, efficient route. Whenever I can, we set up a day or two before, pick up a day or two after. Those things kind of help as well.
I don't have any more questions around the business stuff specifically. I kind of want to wrap things up with exactly like your podcast, which, because I think that's really cool. The fact is that you've been podcasting since 2018, which was like wild, because that was like the year before it was cool to have a podcast. So like kudos to you for like starting early. I'm curious what your experience has been podcasting, because one of the so knowing when this is going to air, we're going to have a guest before you just started a podcast a year ago, has like been cranking out podcasts, 150. I can say the name now, Danny Miranda, since people have listened to it at this point. And so he's really cool. He's been like cranking out content, and he said it's like absolutely changed his life, 10x his network. I'm curious from your standpoint, what's that experience been like for you?
Yeah, good question. Well, credit goes to Corey Haynes. It was his idea to start the podcast. Yeah, dude, it's been hard. That's what I would say to people. It's a lot of work. I mean, you guys know you have to carve out time for your calls and your meetings and the prep and doing research. I mean, it's a good amount of work. When we first started, we were doing an episode every single week. We had one stretch where we did an episode a day for 14 days straight. So that was also a ton of work as well. And now we're way more lenient about our schedule. We try to do every other week, but we're sometimes every 3 weeks, or, you know, we're not super consistent anymore. It's been good. It's been a really good experience. We don't do it to make money. We don't do it to like grow, you know, really grow our network or anything like that. It's more just an outlet for me and Corey. You know, the whole premise is talking about the things that we're learning, just, you know, reading and learning about, you know, what's going on with our walk with God and what's going on with our businesses. So that's kind of our main premise. And so we try to appeal to a wide variety of people, people of faith, people of business, people that like to learn. And so, it's been fun, but like I said, I would say it's definitely hard. I think people don't realize that. I think it's easy if you're just kind of not very committal about it, but I mean, we're pretty serious about it and we've been faithful for a while. We've done it for a long time. So, it's been a good experience, but at the same time, I know how hard it can be. So I think, you know, guys like you that are starting a podcast and growing it quickly, that's really cool. That's really exciting to see. So, yeah, it's been a good experience.
Definitely. I think the best thing that I could relate it to is like going to the gym, where I will say it's so consistently, because most of our podcasts, it's seven right now. I guess it's four your time. But most of our podcasts, we tend to try to record during the evening time, just that way, like, doesn't break up the day or anything like that. And like almost all of our podcasts, I'm not looking forward to going to. And no disrespect to the guests. Like, most of the guests are like fantastic, and I like love talking to them. But going to the podcast, I'm like, oh man, like, all right, I got to entertain for a little bit. Like, I got to like the coffee is already worn off at this point. Like, time to like get it back together. But just like the gym, you never, like, I've yet to leave a podcast recording where I was like, oh damn, like I wish I didn't do that, right? Like I'm always like fired up after these episodes. So I feel like that's like the best analogy I can compare it to.
Right. Once you're at the gym working out, you feel great. Right. No one's typically there. I'm like, oh, I wish I wasn't here, but it's always that stretch. And I think the other part that people don't realize is, like, I don't know, the back end of it, I hate the editing. Like the editing and then going back and doing it, and that's still kind of a work in progress, or trying to figure out exactly how to do that. The other, like, carrying the microphones, when we probably travel too much. But then, you know, trying to plan that around, and I think our microphones are heavy. Probably got to get smaller ones, throwing those in a backpack. So it's been interesting, but I don't know. I think we've definitely had a fun time doing it and just trying to figure out some of the kinks there.
Yeah. Well, I love the podcast. Corey sent me the episode that he was on. And dude, I've loved it. It's been fun listening to it. You guys are now in my rotation, so keep doing what you're doing. Nice. It's been good.
Dude, Corey's episode is the best one, because there's the only one that Gio wasn't on. So, sorry. I said to throw it out, but Corey's was awesome. I have just two small things on the podcast. I listened to the most recent episode with, what was his name, Dale. And super, super interesting episode. But as I was scrolling back to try to prep a little bit more for this podcast, I saw one episode titled like Life Principles or something like that. Do you have like a certain set of like principles that, like, looking back on it, like, hey, here are a few things that I always try to do in my life that like make you better at business, or just like a better human being in general, that you tend to strive for? You definitely, like, I can tell you're religious. It's a faith-based podcast too. But are there things that go with the religion or things on the side of that?
That's a really good question. Yeah, I mean, I'm a Christian, and so that, you know, my life revolves around my faith. And so you know, that's where my worldview comes from. I think, you know, decisions that I make, things that I do, things that I say, things that I spend my time on really revolves around that. I mean, just basic things about Christianity. I mean, being good to those around us, being honest. You know, I don't want to be someone that, you know, says I'm going to do one thing, then I don't do it. So, you know, just basic principles like that. I mean, I, for the most part, just try to be easygoing and likable. I mean, my personality is pretty laid back for the most part, and so it's not super hard for me. But yeah, just try to be good to people. You know, one thing I have found is the more, I think I've mentioned it so far in this podcast, but the more people that you know, the more people that are in your camp, like, then that's better for you, because they're going to help you out, they're going to refer you to people. And so yeah, those are just some basic things that I try to center my life around. Yeah.
It's crazy. I've never heard someone from San Diego be described as laid back before. That's like really like a totally ground. I'm kidding. No, that's cool. I think that's well said. Yeah. The more people you have on your side, the more likable you are. Like, it's just easier to find opportunities. It's easier to do business. It's easier just to like get along and have fun with people in an everyday life, which is well said. I always want guests, if they have a podcast, newsletter, Twitter, whatever like that, at the end of an episode, to plug it. I want to go like a step further, because you have a lot of content. You have 149 episodes. Jesus. Jesus. what episode has been your favorite, that people can go check out? If you had to go and think through one that you were just like you pressed end on the mic and you were like, that was a good one.
Yeah. Like, damn, I killed that one. No, that's a good question. I don't go back and listen to the episodes ever, so I don't remember them very well. I would just say the best ones are probably the ones, or that say like year in review or mid-year review. Those two are always our favorites, because we just talk about the things we've been up to the last, you know, 6 months or for the whole year. We've been doing that every year since we started. So again, mid-year review and then year in review. And I think there's one on there that I'm pretty sure it was about me, and I think it was like Jeremy's testimony might be called. I'm not sure what it's called, but I talked a lot about how I bought the business, the kind of what that looked like in detail. That's probably good one as well. So
nice, man. Well, it was a pleasure having you on today, Jeremy. And if people want to follow you on Twitter, I know Corey's going to get you to start tweeting more, and hopefully the same after this episode. We're going to check you out.
Yeah, Twitter is good. Just my name, Jeremy LeBon. If you want to look at our website, it's wondereventrentals.com. The Instagram is wonder.eventrentals, or they can email me, jtlebon@gmail.com. It's probably the best place to start with. So thanks. It might be your first guest that I gave an email rather than Twitter. So
boom.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on. That was a blast.